Please continue to stand by. We will begin shortly. Once again, please continue to stand by for today's conference. Welcome, and thank you for standing by. I'd like to inform all parties that your lines have been placed in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Ensure your phone is unmuted and record your name and affiliation at the prompt. This call is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Tom Skinner. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Calvin, and thank you all for joining us today for this telebriefing where we'll be discussing the launch of a new global health security initiative, which we all hope will make the world a safer place. With us today is three speakers, Laura Holgate, who is the Senior Director for Weapons of Mass Destruction, Terrorism, and Threat Reduction at the National Security Council, Dr. Tom Frieden, who's the Director of the CDC, and Andrew Weber, who's the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Nuclear, Chemical, and Biological Defense Programs. Each will provide some opening remarks, and then we'll get to your questions. Please identify yourself when you ask your questions, and please identify the person whom you'd like to respond to your question. So without further ado, I'll turn the call over to Ms. Holgate, who will provide some opening remarks.
Before we get to that, can you say a couple words about the embargo, please, Mr. Skinner?
Absolutely, yes. For all of our reporters on the call, we need to make sure that you're aware that the information on this call is embargoed till 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, February the 13th. Thank you.
Thanks. Hi, folks. This is Laura Holgate, and just a few words by way of overview. And the first thing that we want to talk about when we're talking about the global health security agenda is that what we're talking about is making the world safer and more secure by strengthening our ability as an international community to prevent, detect, and respond to infectious disease outbreaks. This includes diseases such as Ebola, other hemorrhagic fevers. Obviously, flu is a lot in the headlines these days with the H7N9 outbreak, and we've all experienced challenges with the flu over the last few years. Dengue fever continues to be a problem in terms of infecting as many as 400 million people each year, and other diseases like the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, and also SARS that got a lot of public attention 10 years ago. This is the kind of challenge that we're trying to prepare our own countries and the international community to work together to be able to deal with. The U.S. has been a leader on this issue for a number of years, and we've worked internally to create a strong capacity for our own resources, but we also have the ability to work across sectors within the security sector, the health sector, the ag sector, agricultural sector, veterinary sector, and so on, to prevent, detect, and respond to infectious disease threats. And this is something where we've been investing hundreds of millions of dollars a year to support activities with our partner countries around the world as well. And we've already seen a lot of benefits in the work that we've been doing. And when you look at, for example, the progress that SARS that China has made since the SARS outbreak, and also with Indonesia in recent years, we can see that countries are investing in their own capacity building and also working with other countries to increase their ability to hold up their end of the stick in terms of the global standards for infectious disease management. In our interconnected world, we are all vulnerable, and this is something that we have been doing because these are threats to the United States. We've got an increased global travel. The trade connectivity around the world means that disease threats spread faster than ever before, and this causes not only loss of life, but also serious economic losses and, you know, ultimately instability from a security perspective. We know that outbreaks anywhere in the world are only a plane ride away, and so that's the challenge that we're really trying to deal with. And even though the U.S. has done a lot and other countries have done some important progress on this, there's more to be done. And so that's what we're really looking at. When we saw in 2012, we were really struck by the reality that 80% of the countries did not meet the World Health Organization deadline to be prepared for disease threats. And this is a really critical number. And we looked around the world and we said, this is not something the U.S. can do alone. We really need to be working more closely and more collaboratively with other countries, and we need to increase the focus and participation of other countries in addressing these challenges. We also know that the disease threats do threaten other countries as well, and that no one country can manage this problem on their own. And so this is truly a global agenda, and we really want to try to develop a sustained engagement from partners across sectors and with the resources that are needed. We saw this highlighted yesterday when President Obama spoke of it in his press conference with visiting French President Hollande. France is an important partner for the U.S. in this area. Finland is also doing important work. But what we want to do tomorrow at the event is really demonstrate in a very visible way that we are working with other countries, 30 partners in terms of countries as well as international organizations from around the world to launch this global health security agenda, really step up our global game and make a difference that is meaningful in our global ability to manage infectious disease challenges. Countries such as China, India, and Indonesia will be joining this international launch. They will announce commitments to accelerate progress in some very specific areas. We're also co-hosting this with the World Health Organization, and there will be a node in Geneva linking in electronically with a number of countries from participating from Geneva, and most importantly, with Director General Chan from the World Health Organization. We also have a node in Rome that will be linking in the international veterinary and international ag organizations as well. From the U.S. point of view, we're going to be putting out there four key deliverables. We'll be announcing, first of all, a commitment that we're going to partner with at least 30 partner countries to meet new specific milestones in the pursuit of the global health security agenda. That'll be over a five-year period. The down payment on that, if you will, is a specific focus in 2014 between our Centers for Disease Control and on our Department of Defense to partner with up to 10 countries to begin implementing and accelerating successful efforts on field epidemiology, new diagnostic tests, and so on. And I'll let my other briefers on this line say more about that specific effort that they'll be leading. Then looking forward, we'll also be announcing that previewing a component of the President's budget for fiscal year 2015 that will announce a specific increase of $45 million within the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's budget explicitly for global health security. And that's one of the first times that we've seen that kind of specific increase dedicated to this mission space. Then finally, the fourth point that we'll be announcing is that we will be convening from the White House a forum in the fall to bring additional nations back together and really highlight progress, talk about how specific commitments have been achieved and what progress has been made, and then set a path to the work over the next years after that. So I think we've got an exciting conversation to be had tomorrow, and we're really looking forward to powering through the snowstorm that may be coming to make this event a real success. So I will look to hand over now to Tom Frieden, and I'll let Mr. Skinner introduce him.
Thank you. Next is the Director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Tom Frieden.
Good afternoon, everyone. The bottom line here is that we have the ability to make both our country, the U.S., and the world substantially safer from infectious threats. We face a real storm of vulnerability. There are new risks from new infections like H7N9. There are resistant organisms, and we're now seeing some microbes that are resistant to all of our treatments. And unfortunately, there is the possibility of the spread of intentionally created organisms, either through a bioterrorist attack or through the inadvertent release of organisms. And with our globalized world, a threat anywhere is a threat everywhere. If there is the emergence of a disease in any part of the world, it could be in any other part of the world within a day. Fortunately, we have three real opportunities. One, there is a tremendous commitment, and the fact that 25 countries are participating tomorrow, that there's immense interest, is evidence of that. The fact that the SARS epidemic a decade ago caused $30 billion of economic damage is something that leaders all around the world have seen, and that the World Health Organization has something called the International Health Regulations, which 194 countries have committed to, but as Senior Director Holgate said, less than 20% of countries have actually met, means that we really do have the opportunity to make rapid progress. In addition to that commitment, there are new technologies that are very exciting, and that includes laboratory technologies, and we're testing one now in the field in Uganda that can diagnose plague in 20 minutes at the patient's bedside and has already been used to save lives and stop outbreaks, and communications technologies, for example, using remote printing or cell phones or data collection through handheld devices. And perhaps most importantly, success leads to success. A much safer world is really within our reach. We know that new organisms will continue to emerge, but we can prevent outbreaks and epidemics. The good news is that where we've moved on this, as in Uganda, we've been able to make very rapid progress. The bad news is that there are too many blind spots around the world, too many places where a disease may emerge and we may be at risk because it's not recognized, found, and stopped there. So the three priorities of this initiative are prevention, detection, and response. And for each of those, we have measurable, concrete, ambitious targets that countries will be able to meet. Just to give you an example, in prevention, we'll make sure that if they're growing dangerous organisms in laboratories, they're kept securely so that the people working in those laboratories aren't harmed and so they don't get out. We'll also work to strengthen immunization programs to prevent deaths today, but also to establish the infrastructure if it were needed in the future. On detection, countries will detect at least five of the most deadly organisms in at least 80% of their country. And on response, countries will have emergency operation centers, which can marshal a response within 120 minutes with rapid response teams to quickly control an outbreak and prevent it from becoming worse. The future is pretty clear here. In 2013, we did two pilot projects, one in Uganda and one in Vietnam, and showed that very rapid progress was possible. In 2014, working in partnership with the Department of Defense, we'll be committing $40 million to 10 additional countries to make this kind of initial rapid progress toward global health security. In 2015, as Senior Director Holgate just said, there will be a proposal in the President's budget to add $45 million to the CDC budget to further expand the initiative toward the goal of, within 5 years, making sure that at least 30 countries not currently protected, with at least 4 billion people, are well protected, and really to call on the world and our partners, and that's what tomorrow is about, to step up to the plate and make sure that we can protect all people in all countries. I'll turn it over now back to Tom Skinner.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Friedman. Next is Andrew Weber, who's the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Nuclear, Chemical, and Biological Defense Programs. Mr. Weber.
Thank you, Tom. The global threat that Laura and Tom described requires the Department of Defense to innovate, especially for confronting biological terrorism. This requires the defense community to work closely with domestic and international health, emergency response, and agricultural organizations in unprecedented partnerships. The Department of Defense's global presence, with our service members and families posted around the world, make us particularly concerned about natural and deliberate infectious disease outbreaks. This is just one reason we need to work with partners to boost global capacity to prevent, detect, and respond to disease outbreaks. We are bringing Department of Defense resources to the global health security agenda through our effective programs, through collaborative investment with the Centers for Disease Control and international partners, and by leveraging the department's long history of medical and health innovation. For just one example, the Department of Defense Cooperative Threat Reduction Program has partnered with the Georgian Ministry of Health to create the Luger Center for Public Health Research in Tbilisi, Georgia. The Luger Center is a state-of-the-art laboratory for Georgia's public and animal infectious disease surveillance system. Well, thank you very much, and I'll turn it over to Tom. I think we're ready to answer some questions.
Calvin, I believe we're ready for questions. Again, if you could give instructions for asking questions, and I would like for our reporters, when they ask questions, to please identify the person for whom they'd like the question to answer the question. So with that, Calvin, I believe we're ready.
Thank you, sir. Once again, if you would like to ask the question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That is star one to ask a question. One moment, please, for our first question. One moment, please. Our first question comes from Michael Smith with MidPage Today. Your line is open.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you. This question actually is for Dr. Frieden. Dr. Frieden, you mentioned in 2014 spending $40 million in, I think, 10 projects similar to those in Uganda and Vietnam, and then $45 million in 2015 to add additional countries. How much of that is new money is the first question.
So the $40 million in 14 is existing resources that are being aligned to this focused approach on prevention, detection, response, and are being added to other resources already going into this space. The proposal from the president for 15 would be additional dollars.
Okay. And then a second question, if I may, perhaps to Ms. Holgate, and that is you mentioned three sort of developing countries, if you will, although I guess China is a pretty major developing country. Are there any other of the developed world involved in this project? Will we see, you know, Great Britain or France or Germany at this meeting?
Yes, you'll be seeing all of those countries at this meeting. I also mentioned Finland as a major donor. Germany has put resources against this effort. So we've also got strong partners in Canada and as well as you mentioned, the UK. The Netherlands and Norway have also been big participants and coordinators of some of the work that we've done. So it's important that the mix that we've developed is both regionally diverse, but also diverse in terms of development status and diverse in terms of countries that can help and countries that may need some help and then countries that may just need technical advice and support for activities that they actually carry out with their own funding.
This is Tom Frieden. Just to add to that, exactly as Senior Director Holgate says, one way to think of it is for upper-income countries, OECD countries, we're asking that they, of course, get their own systems well-run and that they consider development assistance or technical cooperation on this area. For middle-income countries, the approach has generally been one of technical cooperation. For example, we worked with China and provided technical input, and that enabled the Chinese government to greatly strengthen their system so that they could rapidly identify the H7N9 influenza virus when it emerged and share it openly with international partners so that we could rapidly make a diagnostic test and begin work on a vaccine. So for middle-income countries, it's largely a technical cooperation. And for lower-income countries, there may be some assistance in, for example, strengthening laboratory networks or establishing a cadre of disease detectives or securing some of their dangerous materials or establishing emergency operations centers as examples.
I should also have mentioned Japan and Republic of Korea as excellent partners in this realm as well.
Next question, Calvin.
Our next question comes from Brian Bennett with the LA Times. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Brian Bennett. I think this is a question for Dr. Frieden. How will the 10 additional countries be chosen and the project in those countries and for the $40 million to be spent? Are these countries that have, say, the most frequent flights coming to the United States or the largest risk of an infection spreading to the United States? How is that selection process handled?
These would be low- and middle-income countries in which, in collaboration with the country, we identify that they have an interest, a willingness to make rapid progress, and a clear need. I don't think we can say that any country is a country where there's not going to be an emerging infection. None of us would have predicted, for example, that H1N1 influenza would emerge from Mexico. We expected it, frankly, from Southeast Asia. So it's not so much the geographic as the ability to make rapid progress as we did in and are doing in Uganda and Vietnam.
Next question, Calvin.
Our next question comes from Andrei Sitov with the TASS, Russian News Agency. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for doing the call. And I guess my question goes to the White House. I have not heard Russia mentioned among the participants. Please correct me if Russia does take part. And my question is about the G8. Russia chairs the G8 this year. I know that this particular issue is high on the agenda for the G8. So how does this new initiative squares with the efforts that we already know about that have been going on for a number of years as a G8 initiative? Thank you.
Thanks so much for that question and for the chance to point out that, yes, in fact, we're very thrilled that we will have Russian participation in tomorrow's launch. We've been working closely with Russia in the G8 planning for this year's summit and the whole process that carries out throughout the year. And we really welcome that this has been identified by the Russian organizers of the G8 as a priority for them. It's a great opportunity to work closely under Russian leadership to advance this concept within the G8 community and to partner with other G8 countries. I think all of the G8 are part of the launch tomorrow, and so it'll be an opportunity for everyone to kind of be on the same page with that. And more broadly, I just want to say that there are many different existing mechanisms that we will be using to develop the actions and the commitments that will underpin this global health security agenda and the 9 objectives that are identified in there. The G8 as such is one, and another key portion and another reflection of the Russian leadership is the global partnership, which as many of you know, was spawned under the G8, but it now grows to 25 different countries and is much broader than the G8 and has been working on issues of biosafety, biosecurity, global health security for a number of years. And so there again, we're really pleased that the Russian leadership of the global partnership is also looking to continue that focus area of work under that set of funding initiatives. So we have a lot of different ways, including through the World Health Organization and other existing structures, to really enhance and elevate the work that's been done with a little bit more political oomph and a little bit more focus to these 9 objective areas.
Next question, Calvin.
Our next question comes from Clara Ricker with National Journal. Your line is open.
Hi, yes, thank you for taking my call. This question is for Tom Frieden. You had talked briefly about the 2 pilot projects and how essentially you guys are going to work for the response. And can you talk a little bit about some of that progress and how that's going to be applied on a more global scale?
Thank you. We wrote these up 2 weeks ago in our bulletin, the Morbidity Mortality Weekly Report, and we could get you a copy of that. But I'll just give you an example from Uganda. There were existing networks to diagnose patients, for example, children born to HIV-positive mothers. But those networks were operating in only part of the country and only for one disease. We were able, with this project, to establish a system that starts with sample collection where patients are sick all over the country, goes to taking those samples to a motorcycle courier who brings them to the provincial capital, where they're overnighted to the country capital, where they're tested with state-of-the-art, high-quality laboratory testing safely, and the results are then delivered to the remote areas by a GSM-enabled printer to enable both patient management and care of the individual and outbreak prevention and control. That was initially expanded to cover Ebola and other hemorrhagic fevers, cholera, and drug-resistant tuberculosis, but has since been used to identify and help stop many different outbreaks, including Zika virus, Congo-Crimean hemorrhagic fever, and others. So it's an example of being able to expand the infrastructure so that we can rapidly detect, respond, and therefore prevent health threats.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Lena Sun with the Washington Post. Your line is open.
Hi, this is a question for all three of you, but anyone can answer. Given the fact that there are already global efforts underway and national efforts underway in the United States to fight infectious disease, what is there special about this initiative that makes you think that countries will, you know, do better since they haven't even met the standards that the World Health Organization had wanted them to?
Well, this is Laura. I'll start off with that and invite others to join. I think what we're looking at really here is a chance to put some political highlight on it by convening a ministerial level meeting and to really put a focus on these nine particular activities and to highlight that these are areas where the U.S. is going to be focusing its own significant resources and where others can also bring resources to bear. And so if we make progress on these nine arenas, we will make a big dent in the international health regulations compliance that we're all aiming for and that the World Health Organization has prioritized. And we'll also be more explicit about applying some of the measures that you heard from Dr. Frieden in terms of how will we know if we've made a difference and how can we visibly and meaningfully move the needle on these various objective arenas. Tom, Andy, do you want to add to that?
I'll just comment that I think this is not something that's brand new and never started. In fact, the good news is where countries have focused, they've made a lot of progress. The bad news is that by 2012, the initial deadline, less than 20% of the world's countries had even self-reported to the World Health Organization that they were fully compliant with the international health regulations. And what we have done is to identify these nine specific areas that countries can work in, move toward, and this allows us within the U.S. government to focus our attention and assistance and technical cooperation, and also to work with high, middle, and low-income countries in the high-income countries to encourage them to help other middle and low-income countries to come up to that mark as well as their own populations, in middle-income countries to focus their attention so they can address these nine areas, and in low-income countries, again, to focus and to think of how they can marshal support for this through bilateral or multilateral assistance. This is something that really is jump-starting global progress toward keeping each country safe and keeping the world safer. Because what we've learned from the progress so far is that a much safer world is within reach, and we need to move forward to get there.
And let me, this is Andy Weber, let me add in strong agreement to what Tom and Laura said, that this is intended to be a shot in the arm that will energize and elevate the global health security agenda. And by making it deliberately multi-sectoral, by bringing the security sector into this partnership, we hope to bring new resources to bear in the way that the Departments of Defense and the CDC have been working together for quite a few years to combine our resources and to make the whole bigger than the sum of the parts.
Next question, Calvin.
Our next question comes from Jeff Cohen with Science Magazine. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's John Cohen. The question I have is about enforcement. The international health regulations call for enforcement, and how does this new agenda factor in with enforcement?
So this is Tom Frieden. I'll start with that, and others may want to join. Currently, the focus of this is for the countries of the world to achieve compliance with the international health regulations, and that will be assessed by the World Health Organization. One of the things that we'll be looking at going forward is what are ways in which we can ensure that there is an objective assessment of each country's readiness in each area. We've been able to do that collaboratively with the World Health Organization and individual countries in areas such as influenza, where we've been moving countries further and further along on the preparedness spectrum, and in laboratory networks, where we've worked in several continents with establishing and accrediting qualified laboratories. And so this is an area that we will certainly be focusing on in the time to come. I don't know if others want to comment further.
I think, Gavin, we'll move to the next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Susan Ascuti with Medical Daily. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. How would you characterize the condition of our strategic national stockpile of vaccines, antitoxins, and other drugs?
CDC maintains for the country a strategic national stockpile. It includes vaccines, diagnostics, medications, and other supplies. We continuously look at the need for different interventions and our supplies, whether that's biological or other, and we have the ability to deploy that within hours to any part of the United States. This is the type of facility that other countries may wish to consider establishing, at least so that they can continue core services in the case of an outbreak. We have not included it in the nine key areas because it's a decision that we believe each country needs to make for itself, as the U.S. has made a decision to do this. We also, where possible, do global collaboration from the stockpile or other U.S. resources, but this is an area, I think, for each country to consider and look at.
Next question, Calvin.
I'm showing no further questions at this time. Once again, if you would like to ask the question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. One moment for our next question.
Calvin, I think we're good to conclude the call. There are no further questions.
We do have some questions coming in.
Okay, we'll take one or two more questions, and then we'll conclude the call.
Okay. Our first question comes from Bob Ruiz with SIDREP News. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. This question is for any of the three speakers, I guess. I wondered if you could just tell us a little bit about what exactly will be happening at the event tomorrow.
Well, I can just sketch it for you briefly. We'll have a few, an opening presentation from Secretary Sebelius, and then Secretary of Health and Human Services Sebelius, obviously, and then Lisa Monaco, the President's advisor for Homeland Security, will also be giving brief opening remarks, and then we'll have a number of other presentations thematically grouped by other countries who are participating. The event itself will be off the record, but those countries may choose to characterize their inputs later afterwards. And then there will also be an opening presentation from Deputy Secretary Higginbottom from the State Department as well, and Deputy Secretary Fox from the Defense Department, as well as our Chief Veterinary Officer. So those are kind of the U.S. participants, and they'll be engaging throughout the day.
Thank you.
Hey, Calvin, I think we need to conclude the call. I want to remind everyone on the call that the information shared today during the call is embargoed till tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. That would be February the 13th. If you have additional questions or need additional information, you can call the HHS press office at 202-690-6343, or you can email the HHS press office at media at hhs.gov. So thank you once again for joining us, and this concludes our call. Thank you.
That concludes today's conference. You may disconnect at this time. Thank you for your participation.